Welcome to Communities Building Homes, a new podcast brought to you by Community-Led Homes North Yorkshire and East Riding. In this podcast, we're going to meet people who are at the forefront of doing, supporting and enabling communities to make great housing, building new homes or refurbishing old buildings, people who are truly making homes to live in and meeting local housing need. I'm journalist and presenter Peg Alexander, and my guest today is Duncan Hayes. Duncan is from NACSBA, the National Custom and Self-Build Association. They want to make custom and self-build a mainstream choice for everyone seeking a home of their own, which they do through lobbying, research and spearheading partnership working groups. NACSBA also set up a sister organisation, the Right to Build Task Force. Now, the task force provides advice and information to support those who want to build and enable custom and self-build homes. They also work closely with local authorities, but also with others, such as community groups. And they want to make sure that the right to build legislation that exists lives up to its potential and actually leads to more homes. Duncan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us. Now, let's start with that first question, if you like. You know, what exactly is custom and self-build, and who's doing it, and how much of it is there?
Well, simply put, custom and self-build operates on a spectrum like community housing. So there's a whole different ways of achieving it, a whole different ways of delivering it. There are two definitions, really, that are concerned with it, self-build and custom build. Self-build tends to be on single plots, but it doesn't have to be. And it is just the process of someone commissioning a home to be built to their own preferences. Custom build tends to be on multi-plot sites where you've got several home opportunities together. And it's distinct in that it's delivered by an enabling developer. That can be a local authority, a community group, or a housing association. But normally the site is put together, and infrastructure, roads, planning is put in place. However, there's also something called multi-plots, which custom build is always, but self-build can also happen on multi-plots. So it may be that on a custom build site, you could have a single plot coming forward, someone could buy that, and then actually go on to self-build on that plot. Custom building often comes with designs that you can choose from or palettes of material that the planners have specified. So it's done by individuals for themselves. That's the crucial element to the.
Yeah, that is it people who are going to live in these homes that are doing this?
That's absolutely the crucial element. So most community-led housing falls into that bracket of custom and self-building because of it. However, for example, if you had a parish that was bringing forward community-led housing and they were nominating the people, that wouldn't be custom and self-build because those original people didn't have that input.
So literally people are saying, I want two bedrooms, I want three bedrooms, I want a bigger hallway, whatever it is that's important to them.
Exactly so. And with self-build, you can do that process yourself. You find your land, you find your designer, you a package company to do it. Custom build, that's often part of the way through. And some custom build products come through and they're just customizable. So you just have got like a choice of houses. There might be three or four houses types. And on that, you can specify where you are. Some of the modular ones, you could choose for your kitchen to be on the top floor or your kitchen to be on the bottom floor. So it allows you to change things like layouts as well as materials and finish. In terms of the size of it, there are roughly 13,900 self-built homes, self and custom built homes, but it's hard to split that down into one or the other routes. They're not really tracked in that way. But of course, then there's also a whole lot of community-led housing projects going on. I think there's collectively about 23,000 houses coming through the pipeline in community-led housing if the fund is renewed. And a lot of those would fall into the custom and self-build bracket. In terms of who can do it, well, absolutely anybody, really. It depends on how much time and energy you've got. If you're custom building, a lot of the issues about finding land and securing planning, they're taken into account early on in the process. So when you come along for a custom build, all of that is already in place. You know something can be built. That normally comes with sort of either design codes or plot passports, which set out what you can build on each plot. So it's a simpler process, really, in terms of engagement.
We will talk about the whole planning question a bit more through this podcast. When you were talking about the self-build, it reminded me of when I was in Canada. And we went to a brand new housing development, and this was a private housing. And my cousin was saying, "Oh, what happens here is you buy the plot of land, You don't go to look for the house. You buy the land.
Exactly so.
And then you choose what house you're going to put on the land yourself. You know, very, very, very different way of doing it. But am I right in thinking, if we're talking self-build, we are actually talking about people getting down with hammers and nails and screws and whatever those things are called, where you put the concrete, you know, on and putting the actual brick laying. We are talking that, aren't we?
No, you're not, actually. Strangely enough, you're not. Just to come back to your first point about going abroad, the UK produces about 7% of its housing through custom and self-build. Now, that's tiny in comparison to a lot of other what we'd refer to as developed countries. But by that, we mean European countries, Australia, America. In those countries, it's a normal way to go forward is to find a plot and then build on it. And a lot of European countries, roughly 40% of their housing output is produced by it. So in England, especially, but also in the UK and generally, we've got this mindset that actually housing has to be delivered to us by a large company. We don't get any say in it. In terms of your note about people getting stuck in, yeah, you can get stuck in and people do get stuck in. But the idea of self-build being a grand designs on a large plot miles from anywhere where someone's busy hammering through the night while someone's having babies somewhere else, it's a tiny, tiny part of the market. Most self-builders do not ever pick up a hammer. Most of them, it's a commissioning process. So you're getting involved with contractors or a whole house manufacturing company. Where people do tend to do that, get involved with the work, is it tends to be things more in the planning or finance or project managing especially. It's not to say that you won't get people building. Some people really want that process. There's also a term called sweat equity. Sweat equity does mean that exactly, getting stuck in and doing it. And that's a way to save money. So often on community-led projects, you'll find there's a lot of sweat equity, people getting stuck in, building roofs, lifting walls and things. But there's a real balance that you need to clear in your mind in terms of how much it will cost you to put all your time into hammering nails into a wall, how much you can earn in your day job, and pay someone to nail your hammers in your wall. So it's about what people want and what people are able to do and deliver financially, or, you know, where it can save corners. So, but no, most people are just armchair builders.
Yeah, I mean, as you were talking there as well, I was thinking about some of those things we often see, say, in American films of the past, where whole communities would come together to build the timber framed houses, you know, and over a weekend or two, the house would appear, all the men of the village would be there to build them. I mean, obviously, we have a very, very different housing market, as you were saying here, and very different construction methods. But you did mention early on at the start about the idea of people kind of having not quite plan houses to choose from. But how much of these are now these kind of flat pack houses, you know, where they're sort of made somewhere else in a factory and then assembled on site?
Yeah, so one of the interesting things about self-build in general is that it's an innovator. So in terms of a whole range of benefits, self-build leads the way and often is miles ahead of the mass market. Mass market housing is built to tight economies of scale. There's many, many accountants sitting in offices working out how to do everything to the very cheapest, lowest common denominator and still produce housing. Self-build flips that on its head. Because of that, self-build has always been an embracer of modern methods of MMC, modern methods of construction, which is a big plus point for government. So we've been an early adopter of alternative ways of building. That could be things like insulated concrete formwork, where you've got a polystyrene Lego effect, and then that's pumped full of concrete. But the package houses, like you said, they are a hugely dominant factor in self-building. Often you'll have either sips, where it's like a sort of imagine an ice cream sandwich and it's board on the outside and then foam on the inside, and that forms the structure of the house. Or it can be an entire build that's done in a factory. Where factory building has its advantages is that, exactly in your Seven Brides for Seven Brothers reference, all of those houses are factory built. So they are built with massive, high levels of insulation, air tightness, so they're very sustainable houses in terms of the build. They then are erected on site in a matter of days.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? Once the foundations are down, they can go up so quickly, can't they?
Exactly. If you're using that package system, they really do up on site. Now, that's great for neighbours because it's minimising disruption. You're not having wet trades like brick and block going on for ages. But it also means that you're boosting kind of local economies, because there's a lot of the houses are built in the UK, not all of them, but a lot of them are built in the UK. So there's real advantages for doing it through a package manufacturer. And then just finally, the great thing about package manufacturers is they've been doing this for years. So normally they have a suite of designs. You can either go and look at some show homes that they've done. For example, Potten has 5 show homes in Cambridgeshire. Or you can sit with them and look on the internet, or sit in their workshops and go through design books. And then you can customize what you want from what they've built before. They might have a set of designs that they can build, but they're often able to sort of customize those further on. So, you know, it can be almost a pattern book approach in some cases.
Wow. And as you say, a lot of them really, really well insulated, pretty eco-friendly. Let's talk about the affordability side of this, though, because I know affordability is really important to yourselves at the task force and at NACSPA. How affordable is this? I mean, I'm always amazed whenever you go for your contents insurance that they talk about the build costs of, you know, when you get your house, not your contents, your house insurance, that the rebuild costs always seem to be kind of quite low once you've got your land. I mean, is this a dead cheap way of doing it and getting affordable housing, getting people in, particularly into their first homes?
It depends as always, what you mean by affordable. The custom and the home building renovation self and custom build market report, which came out in 2017, they estimated that self builders can on average save 30%. If you are doing it alone as a self builder or as a custom builder, you can make savings. Principally, where they come from is the fact that it's VAT exempt for materials and labour. And also it's exempt from the SIL. So the SIL is a levy that local authorities place, Community Infrastructure Levy.
What does the SIL stand for?
Community Infrastructure Levy. So basically, okay, when you're building, to make it more palatable and acceptable to the local community, all building has that SIL levied against them. Not all councils have SIL, so some of them might do it from Section 106s. But that's a fee, and then that goes to supporting local activities, maybe improving roads or trees or playgrounds, customer self builds, if the council has SIL, they're exempt from SIL. There's a strict process, but that can often be a sort of a saving of £20,000 to £30,000 in itself. In terms of how affordable it is, the one thing about self builders is they tend to overspec. They build better quality, better designed homes with more sustainable features. So it's not just overspend because people get carried away with marble baths, but that. If you're self-building, most people think, I'm going to be living in this house for a long time. A lot of older people do it and future-proof, and they want to know security of how much their bills are going to be, that the house will adapt and they won't have to move out if their needs change. So because of that, they will often put features in that are more expensive. So it can be affordable. You can use sweat equity to build it, and that definitely is a saving, although you might drive your neighbours mad with a sound of hammering, but there are routes into a saving. I would just point out, though, as well, and this is especially true for community-led housing, that in terms of definitions of custom and self-build, from local plan perspectives, it can be used to deliver affordable housing, social housing. You occasionally see some registered providers working with custom and self-build as a way to sort of broaden and diversify their market. Where that can really be beneficial is... if sometimes you will find that councils will obviously have a spec for how many homes they need, how many bedrooms they need in those homes. But often things like custom and self-build will allow people to cater to their needs. And that can be true, say, for example, for Black and ethnic minorities, where the open market's just not providing that. So an example with that is extended families. If you've got parents living with you, which many people do, but is more dominant in certain cultures, you can then build the house that reflects that, that's adequate, that's got bathrooms and living rooms and spare bedrooms downstairs.
The house, as you say, the house that actually meets the needs. In this series as well, I'm going to be chatting with an organisation called Latch, who work with volunteers and other people who are homeless to help them do up their own housing. Yeah. So who's financing this then? Because this all sounds wonderful. Are you able to get a mortgage on customer self-build? Yeah. Could it get money for the Affordable Homes Programme from Homes England? How does all that work in terms of
finance? Yeah, in terms of groups and larger councils, authorities, stakeholders like that, the task force has on its website a series of notes about finance and affordability and different elements, benefits, and they're always worth having a look at, even though they're professional tools. The self-build portal, which is NACSPA's website for consumers, also has lots of information about this.
Let's talk about the whole issue of planning, because planning is such a massive, massive issue for everybody involved in any forms of housing at the moment. In other conversations, I've talked with people about how schemes that are community-led can sometimes help the planning process get through more easily because it's come from the community that they want these homes. Is that the case with custom and self-build, or is it still pretty difficult to get planning permission?
The situation is changing, and it's changing for the better. So the custom and self-build in England, because of the legislation, is statutory. So councils have a duty to maintain a register of people wanting to custom and self-build, and that can include groups for community-led people. And then they have to, within 3 years of people signing up, they have to show how many plots they've delivered to support that demand. So there's a process of demand, and we're seeing appeals going through planning now where wider elements of demand are set out by the planning guidance are now being considered and required as well. That's sort of other surveys, other housing needs surveys. But for planners as well, one of the things the task force does is a lot of work with local authorities. It's got a lot of guidance that's freely available on its website for planning. So you're seeing the message get through. It's an education message in terms of both consumers and for stakeholders and professionals. And that's actually people working, whether they're house builders, SME builders or local authorities. So it's a little by little approach. However, just like you said, with community-led housing, custom and self-build has some real wins. It tends to involve local labour. It's built by SMEs who tend to be local companies. SMEs have far higher apprentice rates. So it starts to feed into wider council ambitions of local economy, education, benefits for the community. We know that anecdotally, custom and self-build, just like community-led housing, by the time people move into developments where there's more than one house, they have a strong sense of community. Well, that can take years to come about from a sort of a wide, large, open market development. And then they tend to build better quality, better designed houses, more sustainable houses. And because they're smaller developments normally on multi-plot sites, they tend to sort of have a bit more appeal. So while you might not always get enthusiasm in the council, once you start explaining these factors and how it's quite a small organic approach, it often is quite well received by local people because of all of those factors. It starts to sort of win the battle of hearts and minds. Often as well, you might find that for planners, they're very busy, they're under-resourced. Occasionally, they might think it's in the too hard to do box, but you'll often get elected members, council support, might be very supportive of the route, as with community-led housing. So again, once planners or housing teams can start to understand how it can be delivered and the benefits, they start to come around. So the situation is definitely getting better and helped by the fact that it's statutory.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the kind of work that you do with local authorities as well, is helping them see, I guess, how this can be a win-win situation, help them, because every local authority is facing a challenge around housing availability and housing and enough housing stock, aren't they?
Exactly so. And if you look at what government's ambitions for what they want out of housing in terms of planning for the future or the Building Beautiful agenda, all of the things they say that they want to see construction and development deliver, custom and self-build delivers as a byproduct effectively. So it really has an important role in diversifying local housing supply. Communities do not want a bolt-on 400-home red brick extension to their little village that's sitting in the middle of the countryside. It looks awful. People don't like it. So this is a different way of doing that. It will never replace that development. We need development on that scale. But this is about rounding out housing supply and giving more people choice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just to finish off on that, I mean, you are broadly supportive of the current proposals that the government got out to change the planning system, aren't you?
Yeah, we are, because I think the zoning system will offer clarity. So we're aware of the concerns about it and aware of the concerns that communities have about it. But for custom and self-build, being able to know what you can do and how offers real surety going forwards. A lot of the boundaries for planning have been in place for decades now in terms of villages and how those expansions. So a lot of custom and self-build has come through either people building on gardens, people knocking down and rebuilding such things as bungalows, infills being taken up and sort of, you know, whether it be a small industrial space in a village. All of those things are running out because that's how we've been building for the last 20 years. So you've got to think, how will communities expand and it be manageable and organic. And at the moment, the system is not really delivering that.
And we'll wait to see whether that still kind of goes through, goes ahead as a government proposal after the recent by-election result.
Exactly,
I know it's
so.
Causing a lot of, let's put it this way, it's just causing a lot of discussion. We've come to the end of our time, Duncan, but I hate this phrase, the elevator pitch, because it just sounds so transatlantic to me. But come on, just, you know, in a few minutes, just give us that pitch on why custom and self-build is absolutely blooming brilliant.
Well, I would have to say, I'm sure the shoes you're wearing or the car you're driving, you've chosen, you've decided what you want, what colour you want, how you want it, you've decided how to paint your house. Why should we not have that ability to choose the biggest, the same things about the biggest purchase we're ever going to make in our lives? So it can contribute to communities. It's a better way of building, and it's great. So we would urge anyone to sort of really research it. There's loads of places to get started, and especially to, depending on whether you feel it's okay with the costs, but sign up to the Right to Build register locally if you are interested. It's a really important way to get this on the council's agenda, that people are interested in the route. And you can find that via our own website, which is the self-build portal. And just have a look what's going on locally. It's a massively exciting, different way of doing housing. And it offers so much scope for doing housing better.
Thanks for joining us this morning. At the start of recording this session, we weren't sure if there was going to be deliveries, dogs barking. There was someone cutting the grass outside my window, but I think we've got through fairly unscathed. Duncan Hayes, thank you so much for joining us on the
podcast. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Building Homes is brought to you by Community-Led Homes North Yorkshire and East Riding. They're at Com-Led Homes NYER on social media. That's Com with one M. The podcast was presented and produced by me, Peg Alexander. I'm at TV Radio Peg on social media.